This is Noisy People. I'm Tim Perkis. Our guest today is legendary saxophonist, composer, and bandleader Roscoe Mitchell in a special show interviewed by guest producer Barbara Golden. This is the Roscoe Mitchell Art Ensemble, playing Carefree in 1968. There's a story about Zhou Enlai, the premier of China in the 1970s. He was asked in an interview what he thought was the impact of the French Revolution on Western culture. And, as the story goes, his reply was, "It's too early to tell." I thought of this when hearing that 2015 marks the 50th anniversary of the founding of the AACM, the artist support group that our guest Roscoe Mitchell was a co-founder of in the mid-1960s. The Association for the Advancement of Creative Musicians brought a new way of thinking about music that was very influential both in Europe, where Roscoe's band, the Art Ensemble of Chicago, lived for several years around 1970, and throughout the USA. In a world of jazz heroes, emphasizing soloistic brilliance, they were focused on the communal, living and working together in groups, rehearsing endlessly day after day to create new communal compositions. And while their focus was, as their tagline put it, great black music, they were open to connections to white avant-gardists such as John Cage and to influence from world music of all times and places. They felt free, as member Lester Bowie put it, to express ourselves in any idiom, to draw from any sources, to deny any limitation. In our current world of fragmented music scenes, including what I would call an oppressive and chops-oriented jazz mainstream, it truly is too early to tell how deeply their astounding work will influence new generations of musicians.
Hi, Barbara.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm very fabulous. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you.
I'm very thrilled that you agreed to be doing this. So there's stuff that I would love to know and I don't know about you. For instance, what was the very first music that you remember hearing as a young person?
Well, I think I'd probably go back to some things that I recognized from going to church. I mean, as a young person, we went to first Sunday school and then regular church every Sunday. And I remember some of the members of the choir, you know, that would come out and sing, and that was always very enjoyable for me. Not so much the sermon at first, but then after a while, I really started to get into the sermon also. It's almost musical. I mean, it depends on who's delivering the sermon.
And at home, was there music in your house? Was there a piano or was there radio? I mean, what did you listen to in the house?
Well, it was what you said. It's radio. I mean, and we had a lot of different shows that we would listen together as a family. On the radio, when I was growing up, one particular radio station might play like a wide variety of music. Back then also in the restaurants, they had the jukeboxes, and on the jukebox there would be a wide variety of music. If it was a popular piece or a jazz piece or whatever, I mean, it would all be there, and people would listen to, you know, all types of music. They were used to doing that, I should say. One minute you might be listening to a popular piece by Nat King Cole or something like that, and the next minute you might be listening to blues and so on and so forth like that.
So, was that in Chicago?
Yes, it was in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, there was a lot of live music, too. Might go to the movie theater, and then after the movies, then there would be Count Basie's Big Band or Duke Ellington.
Really?
Absolutely. absolutely. And the musicians would do maybe 2 to 3 shows a day, you know. It'd normally be 2 movies, and then the movie screen would shut down, and then all of a sudden you would have this live music in between.
So what instrument did you first play and when?
Well, I consider myself like a late starter. I started playing the clarinet. Back then, it was kind of an unwritten rule where people would say that if you want to play saxophone, you should start on the clarinet. I started when I was close to 12 years old. My older brother, Norman, would sit me down. I mean, he had all these 78s back then. Everybody had the 78 records, and they called them killers. And he'd sit me down, and we'd listen to Lester Young, listen to Charlie Parker, Sarah Vaughan, Billy Eckstein, and so on and so forth. This is what started me to really maybe think of really getting into music. You know, I always wanted to play the saxophone, but then I was playing clarinet in high school band, and the guy that was playing the baritone saxophone was graduating, and the band leader, Mr. Culver, asked me if I wanted to play the baritone. And so, of course, I did, because I wanted to get over to saxophone anyway. So that's when I started to play saxophone.
How old were you then?
I said high school, right? I was probably around 14 or so like that. Mm-hmm.
So after that, how soon after that was AEC formed, or am I jumping too fast?
Well, that would have been, yeah, a longer
ensemble
time.
Ensemble of Chicago.
The AECM got started in 1964 or 65. What is this year? Yes, 1965, because this is the 50th anniversary of the AACM. That happened after I got back from the Army in 1961, and it is an outgrowth of the Mulhall Richard Abrams Experimental Band. The Experimental Band provided a platform where people got together and wrote their own individual compositions for the band, and get a bunch of musicians together, and then people start to talk, and this is where the beginning ideas for the formation of the AACM started.
So was that, would you call that music? Because what I'm really interested in is what made the swing into like much more abstract experimental art, you know, into the music. When did that shift happen?
Well, it happened long before me getting back there, because when I first came back to Chicago from the Army, I was still thinking of music in a very traditional mm-hmm. way. But there were people there that were not doing that. And although I heard the music of Ornette Coleman when I was in the Army, I didn't quite fully understand it. But also, I was in the headquarters Usura band in Heidelberg, Germany. And our band would go to Berlin, and also the band from Orléans, France, would come to Berlin, and then we'd have the three bands together there, and we'd do these large concerts and parades and so on. But there were also all these jam sessions, and Albert Eiler was in the band from Orléans, France. I didn't understand what Albert was doing at that time. I did know, though, that he had an enormous sound on the saxophone. And being a saxophonist, I had to respect that. So, and one thing that made a big impression on me at that time, we were playing the blues, and Albert played the first few courses of the blues in a traditional way, and then all of a sudden he turned into sound. And that kind of started me to thinking, but not until I got out of the Army and got back to Chicago and heard Coltrane's record, Out of This World, the record that's labeled Coltrane, and it had Out of This World and Inchworm and all of these different pieces on there where Coltrane was using a modal concept to create the improvisation on there. After I heard that record, then I went back to listen to Eric Dolphy and Ornette Coleman and Albert Eiler and all of these people, and their message was more clearly understood mm-hmm. by me. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the exposure, and then that very open mind, and mm-hmm. you said you liked the sound. yeah. the sound of the sound. Mm-hmm.
The Art Ensemble of Chicago in 1967, playing A to Erica from the 2012 CD Early Combinations, with Roscoe Mitchell, Joseph Jarman, Lester Bowie, Malachi Favors, Charles Clark, and Thurman Barker.
Tell me a bit about Art Ensemble of Chicago. Like, what happened? How did that happen? Who's in it?
The AACM was the larger organization. Within the AACM, you had smaller groups that came out of there. When I got back to Chicago, I started to put together my bands. You know, the bands were mostly led by me until we went to Europe in 1969. But I think that the Art Ensemble was able to survive because it became a cooperative, because we weren't making a lot of money. I certainly was not able to pay musicians, you know. But I was lucky because I was in a situation where people had the same vision in mind. What we did was we rehearsed 5 days a week from about 9 to 5 every day. Everybody was putting their time in and so on like that. And so when we went to Europe, we became Art Ensemble of Chicago. And then that was a key issue for us, you know, because we were like family, you know, and we got some concerts. We might take some of that money and set it aside. You know, we need another truck, or we need this, or we need that, you know. So we had like an ongoing, we call it a pot, you know, and we put a certain amount of our earnings in that pot, and then we get paid a certain amount of money.
That's what I wanted to know. Like, how did you put the roof over your head, or...
That's how we were able to do that. I mean, when we first went to Europe, Lester and his family moved into the Pack Hotel in the Left Bank in Paris. Joseph and Malachi and I, we moved into the Maison Blanche, which is the mental hospital in Paris, because one of the trumpet players, one of the doctors there was a trumpet player, and he set it up so that we could stay there until we got on our feet and were able to get ourselves
That's
a place.
Great. Yeah. Did you ever entertain the patients there or practice?
No. I mean, we... And I can't remember how long we stayed there, but we stayed there until we recorded People in Sorrow and those other records we did for Pathé Marconi. But then that gave us enough money to get ourselves a place. So we got a house out in Saint-Loup-la-Forêt, which is 18 kilometers north of Paris, you know. So it was big enough for all of us, and had some land around it and that, and we could rehearse there and so on. So we were on our way. We got some more gigs. We got another vehicle.
And how long were you there in France?
That first time we were there, For about 2 years.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I didn't know any of this. Wow.
Yeah. Well,
life.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, music is
how
an exciting life.
Yeah, but how old were you then, around?
Let's see, 20? we went to Europe in 1969, I believe it was. So I was 29.
Damn.
This is from the track Full Frontal Saxophone from Roscoe's 1997 CD, Sound Songs.
Just the most funnest gig you can think of that just jumps into your mind, the most funnest gig that you played with people, where and who were you playing with?
So many, Barbara.
Is there anything that comes?
The musical community, it's a very special community, and when you go out on the road, then you see people that you haven't seen for a long time, and you get a chance to hang out with them and get caught up on lost time, and it's almost like you unplug. And then when you see each other, you plug back in again. So
love that. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed Duende with Oliver Lake?
Oliver Lake,
that was, I've seen you perform quite a bit, and that was, for me, very, very exuberant, and very joyful, and very free. It seems like there's a lot of those things happening, so you're a lucky guy. I mean, because it seems like it happens a lot when you're... when you're up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Oliver and I go way back, you know, and that was through association with Lester Bowie.
Uh-huh.
I mean, after we got the AACM established, then Lester had came from St. Louis, you know, and we thought, oh, let's put together some sort of a situation where, you know, because we were interested in providing employment for ourselves, and so we got to know them through Lester, and they were inspired by the AACM, and they put together a similar organization in St. Louis, and we started to have these exchange program concerts, like some AACM members would go down to St. Louis and do some concerts, and some musicians from St. Louis would come up to Chicago and do concerts. So
you just did something like that in the fall, didn't you, there?
Yes, that's right. That's right. It still goes on,
This is the Roscoe Mitchell Art Ensemble, the 1968 ancestor of the Art Ensemble of Chicago, playing Lester Bowie's composition Tatas Matos from the 2009 CD Conglipsius.
Do you have for future for composers? And I know you teach at Mills at the present time.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things with writing is to write. You know, you have to write if you can write every day. That would be really, really great, because for me, I mean, it takes a long time to mature as a composer. You know, and you can't be in one place before you put in the time to get to that spot. And then you get to that spot, and then there's a lot more to do to get to the next spot, and so on and on and on and on. It just keeps going like that. I'm totally excited about learning right now. I mean, it's so much to learn. Yeah.
Yeah, I see you playing classical music and flute and old Baroque flutes and transverse flute and, yeah. So what's a perfect day for you right now?
Well, I still love doing what I'm doing. If I could have the most balanced day, it would certainly include like writing some music every day and practicing, of course. You know, I'm interested in so much in music that it's going to take me a few lifetimes to really learn what I would like to learn about music. So there's no lack of things to do. I'm just as excited about it as I was when I first started. Whenever I get together with other members of the AACM, for instance, if I get together with Muhal, it's just like we may have discussions about composition, and certainly we get together and practice together, and it's just the same kind of thing that we've always done.
This is Romu, Muhal Richard Abrams, and Roscoe Mitchell from their 2009 CD Spectrum.
What's a perfect meal for you? What's a memorable meal or something that you really like to eat?
I mean, it's a whole ritual type thing, you know, getting together with friends and making a really good meal. One good thing about being out here is, I mean, the produce and stuff that you can get out
it's
here.
It's remarkable.
Just totally remarkable.
Northern California.
Yeah. And then I'm loving, you know, learning different recipes because... if I learn one recipe, I get a lot out of it, you know. Yeah. I mean, it can be applied to other recipes that I might want to explore, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I still am not a great baker, but I want to learn how to do that, you know. I
mean, anything specific you're looking at to learn?
Well, I mean, I'd like to be able to make a really nice cake or, you know.
Maybe I can show you the ropes someday.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, just tell me one last thing. I want to know your plans for the summer because I know you're going to team up with Jack DeJohnette, and what's happening this summer for you.
Okay, let's see. Now, there's a lot of different things going on
this
year.
That's a lot.
Yeah, because
sounds
of the
great
50th anniversary of the AACM, which... if I think about it, it's hard to imagine 50 years.
I know, isn't it amazing?
It is amazing.
And we feel so young and look so young.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We're
going to
hear some good music now of Roscoe Mitchell.
This has been the Noisy People podcast number 6. My special thanks go to our guest Roscoe Mitchell, to our guest producer Barbara Golden, and to Philip Perkins. Also our thanks to Wendy Nelson, who recorded the interview at Mills College in Oakland, California. This podcast is available through iTunes subscription and at the website noisypeople.net, where you can find images and information about the artist's recordings, as well as a link to Barb's original three-hour radio show, with 2.5 hours of great music and an extended version of the interview. The podcast is also available through our partners at creativedisturbance.org, a project of Leonardo and the University of Texas at Dallas. Noisy People is a project of Artifact Recordings, and this has been episode number 6, produced in May of 2015.